Well, I'm so happy to be here this morning with my friend and colleague, Reverend Jimmy. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you, everyone from Twin Cities Buddhist Sangha and from Clouds and Water for being here. So I've asked, we're each going to speak for about 15 minutes, and I think we'll have time for questions too. So anyway, I'm going to ask Jimmy to go first if you're ready.
I think my voice. I think it might. No.
We'll just start talking, and if it doesn't, we'll let you know. Maybe keep on to hold it. There are more attendance. So, I'm here today. Some of our Dharma friends called me. They were sick this morning, and they were not able to come. I think it's kind of going around. So please be careful yourself. Take care of yourself. So good morning. My name is Reverend Jimmy. I'm Johto Shinshu Minister. So I was born and raised in Johto Shinshu Temple family in Fukuoka, Japan. So if you have been to Japan, so Fukuoka is the south west kind of end, so the closest town to Korea. So when I was child, my grandfather was a head minister of a temple, and later my father took on that responsibility, and now my brother is a head minister there. So from for like about more than 500 years, so generation after generation of my family and has cared for that small countryside temple. So growing up in such an environment, the sound of chanting, the chanting sutra, and the presence of Dharma were always around me. So when I moved to Minnesota, I was far away from the temple life for a while. So but here I encountered the Twin Cities Sangha. It was through the warmth and the encouragement of this community that I found that strength to take my own steps on the path of the sharing the Dharma in English, in a state outside of Japan. So together here today as a disciple of Shakyamuni Buddha is a rare and precious gift. Does anyone know what is thank you in Japanese?
Arigato.
Arigato. Yes, thank you. Arigato. Arigato comes from the word arigatai. Arigatai is made of two kanji characters combined, arigatai, into the one word. It means it is rare to be. So we appreciate and embrace this arigatai moment. It is very rare to be moment. I want to express my joy and gratitude for encountering something that should not have happened due to the result of countless causes and conditions. At the same time, we must also recognize the suffering that surrounds us. Just 10 days ago, here in Minnesota, a tragic and an unacceptable event took place at the school, the very place that should be the safest for the children. Such events remind us of the reality of human foolishness and of how fragile life truly is. They also remind us of the importance of supporting one another, about working together as a sangha, community, friends, and of listening deeply to the wisdom and compassion of the Buddha. In the Lotus Sutra, there is a famous parable, a story used to help us understand the nature of human life. It is called the parable of burning house. Children are playing inside an old, fragile building. Flames spread, smoke fills the air. The beams begin to crack. From outside, the father calls, "Come out quickly. the house is on fire. But the children observed in their play do not respond. Their eyes remain fixed on toys and games. The danger is real, yet they cannot see it. The father then reflects, simply telling them the truth is not enough. Their minds are too bound by attachment. So he speaks again, this time offering something to match their desires. Come out, go outside. I have a cart for you. You're the most favorite toys. Wonderful, big carts. Hearing this, the children rush outside. Once safe, they discover not small carts, but the magnificent, the great vehicle far beyond what they imagined. This parable reminds us the burning house is our world of suffering, fueled by greed, anger, and ignorance. The Buddha, knowing our limitations, uses upaya, skillful means, to guide us. Without such compassionate means, we remain unwilling or unable to leave the burning house on our own. Century later in China, one of the seven masters of Pure Buddhism, Master Zendo, he also called Shantou, they shared another famous parable to illustrate the human condition and the Buddha's compassion. So can we share the picture on the screen? Or I actually copied of the picture, just two of them.
I think we can do the screen.
Okay. So meanwhile, can you pass around? While we are waiting. Here we go. Thank you. Thank you so much. So it is known as a parable of the two rivers and the white path. So you see that the traveler comes to the vast wilderness before him. Okay, so that's a river. And then do you see that the very thin white path that crossing the river? And then the before river, this side, it is a traveler. And it comes to the vast wilderness. So before him lie two ranging rivers. On one side, so that you're on your left side, is a fire. On the other is a water. So between them, the stretched the narrow white path, very wide enough for one person. Behind the traveler, bandits and a wild beast threaten his life. Ahead of path looks terrifying, almost impossible, the crossing the river. He hesitates. If I go forward, I may fall and perish. If I stay here, I will surely die. In that moment, his despair, he hears a voice from behind. So it's kind of hard to see, but behind him, the traveler, there is a, looks like, you know, the Buddha statue. So it's a Shakyamuni Buddha. The Shakyamuni Buddha's encouragement, do not turn back. This path through narrow, it's not narrow, but leads to safety, go forward without fear. And then from across the river, he hears that the traveler hears another voice, Amida Buddha's compassionate bow. Come as you are, step onto the path, I will receive you. Strengthened by these voices, the traveler entrusts himself and begins to walk, step by step. He continues until he reaches the far shore. So we all notice how thoughts arise like waves. So how anger or desire can flare up like a fire. Or how confusion can feel like a rushing river. We also see these flames and floods within our hearts. But alongside this, we hear the voice, the call of Amida Buddha. Buddha with invisible light in the light. We entrust ourselves to the calling voice. The path is not about escaping this world, but awakening within here and now to the walking of compassion that sustains us. So both sitting in silence and then voicing the name Butsu, Namandabu. So we chant together at the end of the sutra chanting. They shine light on the human struggle with suffering and open us to the compassion that carries us beyond. And yet, as we reflect today, we cannot turn away from the suffering around us. Here in a community of Minnesota, young children lost their lives in a place that shouldn't have been safest, their school, their church. Families, classmates, and teachers carry wounds that may never fully heal. And this is not only here. We look around the world and we see that wars have never truly ceased. Conflicts continue generation after generation. Peace always seems fragile, never secure. Along with this, there are many parts of life that do not go the way we want them to. We have hopes and dreams, but life often unfolds differently. Sometimes, even when we try our very best, life does not reward our efforts. We may carefully plan for the future, only to see everything shift in ways we never expected. And perhaps the most painful reality is that all life will end in this world someday, for sure. We don't know when, but all life is impermanent. Yet Buddhism begins by asking us to see this truth clearly. Life does not always go according to our plans. It is precisely from this deep awareness of impermanence and limitation that the Buddhist path opens before us. The Buddha does not offer a world free from change. Instead, the Buddha offered us a way to see clearly, to live with awareness, and to entrust ourselves to compassion far greater than our own strengths. So today, let us reflect with gratitude, appreciation, that even in this world of conflict and uncertainty, even amid tragedies caused by human hands, but we are not here alone. We are not left alone. The Buddha's call continues to reach us, and so we reverence and joy. Let us put our hands together, listen deeply, and then entrust ourselves to the path before us. Namo Amida Butsu. Thank you.
So in case you haven't picked it up, our theme is gratitude. But of course that gets interwoven with all the other things that are happening. So when I thought about speaking about gratitude, I mean, first there's the gratitude just that we can be here together. The two sanghas sharing together. That we have the opportunity to practice in our own tradition and sharing traditions. So I'm deeply grateful for that. I also was thinking about how often our default quality is not gratitude. For some people it is. But usually it's something else, like greed, anger, or ignorance. So, and I was thinking particularly about greed or craving, and how that arises, and how it's probably deeply rooted to a survival instinct. You know, like if we can get stuff, if we have stuff like food and shelter, then we're more likely to survive. So there's that. But then, you know, we can look at how craving doesn't lead to happiness. In the Plum Village tradition, they have something called the five mindfulness trainings, sort of similar to our precepts. And there's a phrase in one of the trainings that says, activity motivated by craving always harms myself as well as others. And I was thinking about how craving is different than a simple desire without attachment. So I might want to have a nice vacation and plan for that. Is that craving? Well, if I'm not like needing to get it, then if the plans don't work out, it's okay. So I can still desire something, but letting go of that kind of sticky, grasping, clinging quality. So if I don't have that stickiness, then if I desire something and I don't get it, I can just pivot and then have the actual experience that I'm having instead of the thing that I thought I wanted. But if our activity is primarily motivated by craving, then that activity has these qualities of possessiveness and self-centeredness, which don't lead to happiness. With those kind of qualities, we use others and things only to meet our needs, only to meet our needs. We treat other people, animals, plants, and minerals with a lack of respect. And when we're caught up in the desperation of craving, and it does feel kind of desperate when we're in that place, it's as if we're wearing blinders and using others to get our own needs met without having true regard for them or for ourselves. And however legitimate our need may be, if we use others in this way, if our activity is motivated by craving, then everyone suffers. So it might be a little bit easier to see how others suffer from our craving motivated activity, but we suffer too. It might be harder to see that, but we can, if we look deeply, we can see how we languish in what we call the realm of hungry ghosts. So this is in Buddhist cosmology, there's a way of thinking about the different qualities of being. And one is hungry ghosts, which is always craving, never satisfied. Never can be satisfied. So when we're in that realm, we end up doing things that are not in our own best interest. And there is, you can think of many examples of someone blinded by craving who did something that ended up hurting themselves. I mean, there's examples from real life and literature all over the place. So because when we're in that realm, our craving or clinging desire obscures our wisdom, and we can no longer see clearly the best course of action. So we might be craving for a better relationship, a better job, more free time, more money, a vacation, a special treat. The point isn't so much what we're craving, but that the quality of the craving itself is a problem. And so sometimes it's a good idea to make changes in our life. Go to counseling so we can have a better relationship, or change jobs or quit a job so that we can have more time. But if we approach these decisions without equanimity, then it becomes a problem. And that if we have an addictive quality to our desire, that pretty much guarantees that even after we get what we want, we still won't be satisfied. We'll still want more. So when we feel that craving, it's like a hungry ghost that needs to be fed. But how do we feed it? going with what? So in the Buddhist literature, it talks about the stories of the hungry ghosts, and the way that they can be satisfied is with spiritual nourishment. And when one is stuck in that realm, the spiritual nourishment that will satisfy is, I don't think paradoxically, the practice of generosity. So when I'm just stuck in the wanting to get something for myself and suffering because of that, the nourishment I need is to be able to relinquish, to be able to give. So it's the practices of generosity and appreciation. The practice of gratitude helps us to be generous. If we're grateful for what we have, then there's a way in which we're not so much clinging to it. Because we see how it comes to us is not just through our own machinations. Things come to us from others. So in the practice of gratitude, I think one thing that we can do is learn to take that energy that we've been squandering on craving and striving and use that energy to practice. So sometimes you see that, like people come into practice and they're like really, you know, sort of striving in practice. Like, I want to get something. I want to get enlightened. I want to get, you know, this big experience. I want to be peaceful. And they're doing it in a way that's kind of craving, but that's sort of okay because it can be a first step, it can be a skillful means. But then we can start to use that energy to really notice the things that we already have rather than getting things that we don't have. And I want to read a little bit from this wonderful book called Nikon, Gratitude, Grace, and the Japanese Art of Self-Reflection by Greg Kreisch. And I just want to read a little section here. All right, I'm going to read more than a thought. Have you ever seen a young child who has a single rigid idea of what they want for Christmas? On Christmas morning, they rapidly unwrap all their gifts, looking for the single gift that their mind has targeted. In the absence of this item, they cry, sulk, pout, walk away from the Christmas tree in disappointment. In their wake, they leave all of their presents abandoned and unappreciated. How often does this pouting, spoiled child surface in our own daily encounters with life? How many gifts have we left lying under the Christmas trees of our past? How many presents remain unwrapped because we have failed to even notice their presence? So take a moment to reclaim your gifts and abandon your ideal images. Open your eyes and see how many gifts there are to unwrap. Notice the presence of your presence. It's not your life that is disappointing. It's your mind that's creating a disappointment. And then here's another little story that will help maybe spark our gratitude or a full reflection, imagination. Suppose you're on a boat and there's an accident. You find yourself struggling to stay above the icy, rough sea as wave after wave pushes you under. Suddenly, a lifeboat appears next to you, and an older woman helps you into the boat. What would your attitude be toward this woman? How would you feel about her? What would you say to her? What would you do for her when you were safely back on shore? Could you ever do enough to repay her for saving your life? Your life is being saved at this very moment. Each moment, each breath. You may not notice it, yet 10, 20, or 30 times a minute, your life is saved by the life-giving air that you are breathing. Take a deep breath. Notice the air going deep into your lungs. Your body takes what it needs to survive. Once again, your life is saved. What is your attitude toward air? What have you done for air lately? Could you ever do enough to repay it for giving you life? What trouble have you caused the air that continually saves your life? So in Nikon, which is, you know, a certain kind of gratitude practice, there's many different suggestions of what you could do. But one of the suggestions is, and I'd invite you to consider doing this, maybe for the next week or however long, or for even for a day, which is to have a daily focus on gratitude and appreciation. So one example of how to do that is to spend time each day reflecting and writing down answers to these three questions. The first one is, what did I receive from others today? And you know, that can go really deep. I mean, it can be directly what you received, or it could be like, well, I drove here and I was driving on roads that someone built and maintained. I received that. So it can be like that, very deep. And then what did I give to others today? And sometimes people get stuck in a kind of really sort of guilt spiral, like, oh, I didn't do enough for others. But sometimes what you give is your smile or your presence or just showing someone where the bathroom is. Something like that could be very simple. Holding someone's hand. So what did I receive from others? What did I give to others? And then what troubles and difficulties did I cause others today? And again, this isn't to like get in a shame spiral about that. It's just to start recognizing like, oh, maybe there's something, you know, then there's an idea like, ah, perhaps I could try avoiding that in the future or tomorrow. Let's see, I think I have time for one more story. So this is a good one, like noticing what you're getting and noticing troubles you're causing. So this is a story about, you know, someone, maybe the name has changed, but that someone that the author, Greg Creech, worked with. So this is like coming to, instead of a therapist, you're coming, meeting with someone to develop a gratitude practice to do the Nikon. So it says here, Jill arrived for her weekly session expressing anger and frustration about an incident that occurred at work the day before. Her company's parking lot is attended by a young man and locked each evening at 6 p.m. Everyone is required to move their car out of the lot by 6 p.m. If they are working late, move their car out of the lot and then they can get it. On one occasion, Jill was delayed and could not get into the lot till 6:20. The lot was locked, so she could not get her car out, but the attendant was still there. So she went up and apologized for being late and asked him to open the gate so she could get her car out. He refused. He said the lot was closed. She reiterated her apology and explained what had happened. He still refused to open the gate. Finally, she summoned one of her superiors to come down to the lot and order the attendant to open the gate. She was absolutely furious about the incident. At the end of her session, I gave her an assignment for the following week. Her assignment was to buy the attendant a gift. Mm-hmm. So here we go, like the anecdote is like giving generosity. A gift, needless to say, she was not happy about the assignment. Why would I ask her to buy a gift for someone who had caused her so much grief? And then he says this, that the attendant refused to let her remove her car from the parking lot is reality. I don't deny it. But there is another reality. The reality of his daily supervision of the parking lot and her car for as long as she has been working there. Her car has never been stolen, vandalized, or damaged in any way. Her attention was well focused on the first reality, that he didn't let her remove her car. or unlock the gate, the trouble that was caused to her, she was focusing on, but she missed the second reality, his longtime service. So I feel like a lot of times myself included, miss the second reality. Because when something happens that bothers us, it causes trouble for us, then that's also a survival instinct. We focus on that. But this is like more beyond survival. Let's focus on gratitude and happiness. So one way is noticing that we can develop happiness and gratitude is noticing what we have and appreciating. And another way is to learn to see that what we have is impermanent. As Shimi said, we will surely die. Things will surely end. There is impermanence. We can learn to see what we have is not solid and eternal. So then we can see the preciousness of life. And I'll just read it. Well, I won't read it. I'll just tell the story. So there's a story from... this is Mark Epstein tells the story about meeting the Zen master or the Buddhist master Ajahn Chah. And he's asking the question, or he and other students are asking this question, what do you really mean by eradicating craving? And how he answers it is he says, he picks up a beautiful water goblet and he says, see this goblet? When I see it as already broken. Like one day it will be broken. So then when I'm using it, I'm really appreciating that, oh, it's beautiful. It's helping me to drink water. I can, you know, feel deep gratitude and then know that it will be gone. And if it was going to last forever, I would have a chance of taking it for granted. He didn't say it like that, but I'm adding that part. So sometimes we can notice that in our life with certain things. Like I think babies, we notice that when they grow up so fast. So like when they're in that one moment, it's like, oh, they're so precious. Or I just adopted kittens. So I see them and they're so precious and I know they won't help. So, and then hopefully I can appreciate when they're big and lazy or whatever. But to really see and expand our gratitude. So we could, you know, with that gratitude practice, if we want to take up the reflection, we could add something. So we could reflect on, what did I receive from others today? What did I give to others today? What troubles and difficulties did I cause today? And then we could add, what is here right now that I appreciate? So bringing it really into the now, I mean, what did I receive from others? Maybe it's a little once removed, but like, what is here right now that I appreciate? Well, that's what I have to say about gratitude. And we have a little bit of time for about 9 minutes or 8 or 9 minutes for questions or comments. So to either one of us. So thank you. Is there someone? Oh, there's someone on Zoom.
There's a comment. Their morning meditation.
Can you say it loud?
Their morning meditation in Insight Timer that focus on gratitude. It sets the tone for the day and it's a nice way to start.
Okay, so if you're familiar with Insight Timer, the meditation app, there's one on gratitude. Thank you. Oh, it looks like Rain has her hand up. So we'll probably have to change the volume because it's muted. The volume is the speaker volume. So is the remote there? Is it? There we go. And then let's see. Let's try to say something, Rain, and we'll see if we can hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, so such good teachings about gratitude. But to me, it seems kind of difficult. And so I'm glad for the story that the Buddha is calling to me, is Amita is helping me, because otherwise it seems like a lot to do on my own.
Yeah, thank you. That's a really good point.
Yeah, thank you for the comment. Yes, me myself experienced. So like today, I really appreciate this moment, and there's so many things around me. But you know, the things happened. Okay, so here is the example. So I have a teenager daughter in my house. She's very glad. But then, like, you know, she's like, oh, can you take me to the Target? And she's like, oh, I'm busy. And I was like, why? You know? And then just that moment, just shifting up. And then, you know, I was like, why, you know, why I'm so frustrated? Well, you know, just anger and frustration just came up in my mind. And then just couldn't, the moment I graduated, you know, I would so appreciate that moment. You know, healthy, fine child, daughter, and then just transshipping into the second, like, why? So, you know, it's just the single moment changed my mind so quickly. So it is so hard to that. Yes, I appreciate so many things. Yes, but so many moments are not. You're feeling that way. Mm-hmm. So that's the way we need light. And it's always there, even though we don't recognize it. Mm-hmm. We most of the time we don't know that we are already on the white path, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard. But sometimes it's not just that okay, but we need to see the light in the hand of us. Otherwise we just lost. So yeah, thank you so much. You know, we need to hear the calling. So otherwise, we just easily to lose the way, our path. Thank you for the comment. Thank you so much.
Yeah, if I could just add, I also feel like the community sangha is another way. Like if I feel I can't do it on my own, that's where like coming here. Meeting with people, talking with people, or just knowing that there's other people who are trying to do this hard thing can be really helpful to me. Anything else? Yeah, kick off.
It's so lovely to see two teachers here from two different traditions of Buddhism. It's a sort of big question, maybe there's a small way to answer it, but like, is all Buddhism about gratitude?
It's naturally happened. So we don't have to force ourselves to feel the gratitude, have a gratitude or so. So the see the truth, searching the truth, and then naturally it's already here, so we don't have to try to earth into the have the gratitude moment, or you don't have to sit under the center of the practice. It's already there.
Sometimes we have to remember it.
Yes, very much so. That's why we need sangha.
But yeah, I think I can't think of a Buddhist tradition that wouldn't have gratitude as part of it. Can you?
It's here.
Mm-hmm. I think I saw your hands right.
Oh, yeah. I think I struggle with in trying to practice gratitude. It's like finding that line. Where it's not like negating suffering or like attempting to bypass mm-hmm. And also that line where like gratitude doesn't become focused on like things mm-hmm. and being like, I love my car. I love my house. Like, and I see that a lot sort of like in American culture that like gratitude gets focused on like objects. And mm-hmm. I think I struggle to figure out how to pull it out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, when, if I'm going to be grateful for an object, then if I bring in impermanence and non-attachment, then it helps that. I mean, I can still be grateful. I just got a New Year's used car that we named Professor Plum. It gets really good gas mileage and I really like it. It's a cute car. But, you know, I'm realizing like all the ways that it came to me and that it won't last forever. And that also there's people who don't have cars. And so it's kind of like that helps to, it's mitigate the danger of getting caught in just like gratitude turns into greed kind of thing. Yeah. But I also wanted to say something about your mentioning about like negating the suffering. So I'm thinking about back to that example with Jill and being really frustrated. Like, you're right here. You know, why can't you open the gate for me? Maybe he had his reason, you know. Perhaps it was like a big thing. He was finishing up his, he was doing paperwork, finishing up that opening the gate would have taken 10 more minutes and then 10 more minutes he would have missed his bus home or whatever. So like that, that's real, like that he had a reason, but also that's so frustrating for her. So she shouldn't like just negate her feelings of frustration and anger. Those are there, but to, you know, bring in like, oh, there's something else here too. So I think there's a way we can hold both. Yeah.
I really appreciated the image you showed. I'm just like, I'm trying to kind of wrap my head around like the laser focus that it takes to like not be carried away by that person got this vacation or like that person has a better car than you know, as opposed to that was a very powerful image.
The image is the very famous, and then I think last spring Mia at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. So they have an exhibit by the Japanese modern artist, forgot his name. So he actually used the series of the story from the Chantal's the vision. So, but he was the one, you know, that created his own visual way to the showing that also. Mm-hmm. And then we have so many chance to see that there's so many artists, you know, that influenced by the image of that picture.